All right, so a lot to break down, a lot of stuff to get into from the press conferences, and a whole lot of time to do that. Just going to be able to spread our wings here, stretch our legs a little bit.
And look, it's time to break already, guys.
All right, well, let's go to break. We'll be back.
You're in the zone.
Right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So a few things that jumped out from the press conference. Carlos Dunlap, hearing from him from, you know, the first time, saying that one of the things that attracted him to the Chiefs was the, quote, opportunity to play on every down. That's of note because we've talked about him being a guy that's, you know, 38, 40% of the snaps and being a pass rushing specialist, that his view is nope, that teams are correlating age and his ability to sack the quarterback as someone who's going to be a specialist in that role. But he feels like first and second down is just as important and wants to go and play those first couple of downs. I appreciated the question about Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Was that St. John that asked him about Russell Wilson?
Well,
I believe it was.
That makes sense.
I appreciate the question about Russell Wilson because it got us an answer that I didn't expect, which mm-hmm. is why when anybody's like, well, what'd you ask the question for? What'd you think he's going to say? I don't know. Like, there's something we can guess that, like, Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes or other people might say if you ask him a question, but you never know what they're going to say. So we asked him about, Russell Wilson, you look at the schedule, you got him twice, he was your teammate, and he said, I love Russell, that's my guy, but, you know, I definitely looked at the schedule, I know we got him twice, but I definitely looked at the schedule, and there were things that I liked that played into my decision. You think December 4th? Is something that he liked that played in his decision that he goes back to Cincinnati?
It's a good.
It's a member of a different team.
I think he just might. I think he might have just noticed that.
Hmm. Things that I liked on the schedule that played into my decision. Well, we know he doesn't like the Bengals front office ownership. Wanted out. Was not happy there. And then goes to Seattle and his career is continuing what it was before his final half year in Cincinnati when he was unhappy and he had one sack. And finally, he's out. And then, of course, the next year they go to the Super Bowl when he's put up with all of that stuff there in Cincinnati. Maybe there are other things about it that he likes on the schedule, but that kind of sounded like there was something more intentional to his commentary about the schedule is one of the things that played into my decision for this team.
Also thought it was interesting to hear from Steve Spagnuolo. He mentioned a name that I have written down in a Google Doc here that I don't think we even got to right after the signing. But whenever I was going through our friend Seth Kaiser's review of mm-hmm. Dunlap, one thing that I wrote down the phrase, I don't think I have seen a player at defensive end in a Chiefs uniform since Tano Passanio who just seems like arms and legs as much as Carlos Dunlap does. And when Spags was asked today, hey, what's enticing about Carlos Dunlap? What does he bring that no one else on this team has? He said length. And specifically invoked TK.
And the length that sticks out.
It's the length that sticks out. And that's mm-hmm. really important in a lot of contexts.
Mm-hmm.
But like that really is the thing that, for lack of a better term, jumps out at you whenever you look. He is the height and has the arms of Chris Jones, who is, you know, a mammoth. I mean,
yes.
He's just an absolute behemoth of a man. And he's doing that from the edge, but he's learned how to use that length in a way that Tano Passanio, unfortunately, just never was fully really able to do. He's been doing it consistently throughout this decade-long NFL career. It has not surprised me one bit that would be the thing that jumps out to Spags because, man, Carlos Dunlap seems like a Spags defensive end.
He does, and, you know, anytime somebody goes, well, you know, he reminds me of TK, Travis Kelce, maybe, hopefully.
right.
Because then it's
measurables,
like, right.
Visually, he looks like Tano Passanio, and then the play starts, and
right.
You go, oh, that's a different player.
Yeah, he's got the size of Tano Passanio.
Yes.
Tano Passanio just had the size.
Right.
And so,
right.
Yes, we know the difference. The man has almost 100 sacks in his career. He wants to get over 100. He wants to be top 25 for his career. And top 25 for his career, he would need to get to 107.5 to get to number 25, which would be 11 and a half sacks left in his career. Now, there are other players that will pick up more sacks along the way as well, so he may need more than that. But as it stands right now, if nobody else gets another sack that is an active player, because I think Chandler Jones is number 25, I will guess that Chandler Jones gets at least a half sack more in his career. So then you would need to get to 108 minimum to be top 25. But still, that's his goal, is that he doesn't want to just get to 100, because he said that'll put him in like the top 50.
Mm-hmm.
107, 108, now you're talking about top 25 of all time. Unofficial results in sacks that go back to 1960, kind of official or unofficial.
Changes your numbers a little bit, yeah.
If it's the unofficial list, to get to the top 25, he's going to have to get to 126 and a half, which is Derek Thomas.
Yes, it is.
Right there at number 25. So he would need about 30 more sacks to get to top 25 in the unofficial standings and unofficial sacks. The official record, since they've been keeping sacks, 107 and a half. So,
but I mean, how interesting.
There's a goal at least.
How interesting is it, yeah, to have a veteran player just be like, yeah, I know exactly how many sacks I have. I want to get to 100. I want to get across. Like, I think he pulled 103 out to try to get to that next category you're talking about.
Like top 30.
Wants to get top 25 eventually. Like, it's just kind of refreshing. And this is, you know, George Karlaftis is in a very different place. Yesterday, 2 days ago, George Karlaftis got asked about if he has any goals for this season. He was like, no, I'm trying to win games and, like, get to the playoffs. That probably should be his answer.
The goal is Glendale.
Yeah, he was playing in Arizona. So which, good news, George. You are playing in Arizona this year. I guarantee it.
I promise you.
Just, play it twice.
You're that confident? We haven't even seen what these young players look like. And you already
lock
have
it
them,
in.
You already have them going to Glendale
the
this
Kansas
year?
The Kansas City Chiefs are going to Glendale this year. Gosh darn it.
Lock it up.
But, like, think about, it was just sort of refreshing for me to hear a veteran player be like, yeah, I know my numbers. I know my numbers matter to my legacy, to my own goals. And also, of course, he hasn't won a playoff game. That kind of thing happens when you spend the vast majority of your career with the Bengals and then leave right as they get interesting and go to the Seahawks right as they stop being interesting. But it's okay to have individual and team goals, especially whenever you're almost a decade and a half into your NFL career. He didn't seem like he was hiding anything or trying to be like, I've got some personal goals I'm keeping to myself. They're in his contract. His personal goals matter to his money, and he mentioned that. The incentives on his deal get him to, what, $8-some million? I think his cap hit this year is like 1.5. If he's going to make a lot of money in Kansas City, it's going to be because he is hitting those numbers. But also, like, he genuinely, I think, wants to win a playoff game just about as bad as anything. Wants to win a Super Bowl as bad as anything. And I just kind of find that sort of veteran, casual honesty to be really refreshing. I think a lot of times those introductory press conferences are a competition to see how much you can be about the team and how little you can care about your own stats when everybody knows him. He knows that he's coming up on 100.
So the Steelers and Diontae Johnson have come to an agreement on a contract.
2 years, $36.71 million.
Okay.
Huh. That's interesting. So DK Metcalf, his deal was 3 years, 75-ish, a little less, I think, than 75. But the idea there was that he's going to hit free agency again very soon. Now, Diontae Johnson, I'm guessing that this is a two-year extension. So I'm curious to see what exactly that locks him down for. But Mike Garafolo notes that he can be a free agent again after the 2024 season. Some of these players and agents and these younger guys, I think, are starting to realize this Amazon money, this Apple TV Plus money, the streaming and new TV deals are going to be seeing these salary caps jump up, and you'd rather hit free agency again as a young player in a couple years than lock up for 6 or 7 years now.
Before this season, or before the offseason, so at the end of 2021's, Aaron Donald throws Joe Burrow to the ground, incomplete pass. At that point, there was one receiver that annual average value was $24 million a year. That was Hopkins.
Was it DeAndre Hopkins, promise?
Okay. There are now seven receivers. That's what's happened this offseason. Gone from one to adding six more. That's the wide receiver market that is just blown up. I mean,
what was your number cut off there?
1 to 6.
For average annual value,
24
million. It's nuts. I'm just looking at the list right now.
Yeah.
Deebo Samuel, just under 24.
So, I mean, that's...
Terry McLaurin, just under 23. Like, it is bonkers.
So, yeah, you had one at 24, and now you've got, what, that would be nine at least 23 million? As quick of a market as I can ever remember expanding to where the money just seemed like it was funny money that fast, that quickly, with all these different receivers, from something we hadn't seen to then just simply being, okay, that makes sense. Just like, oh, yeah, you got that much money. Cool. Oh, $25 million a year. Ah, makes sense. Oh, $26 million. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. When it was like, holy bleep, DeAndre Hopkins is getting like $25 million per year as a wide receiver? Woo, good
signing
for him.
Signing at age 28, although that's also an age Tyreek Hill just signed out. Woo. So maybe that's not, you know, 28's the new 24.
Good for Hopkins. I mean, the Cardinals giving up not much, but boy, they're giving up salary cap for this guy. They clearly believe in him and what he can do for Kyler Murray. Woof.
Dumb Jags.
I think, well, look, I mean, that deal all of a sudden was looking like a steal. All of a sudden, Christian Kirk's down here, and, you know, 18 per year, it's a steal.
The real steal is Mike Williams. Because he signed before Christian Kirk, right?
Yes, and DJ Moore also signed early. Yeah. He's still making 21. Mike Williams, a flat 20.
Oh.
Yeah.
20 Mike million. Williams is making $20 million a year. What would he be making if he waited on the franchise tag till like July 15th at the deadline?
I bet he'd be at like 22. I bet he could have picked up a couple extra million a year.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be at 26 or anything
but
like that.
But it'd be a lot. I'm looking at the numbers.
But
it's
he'd
a lot
be
of
a
money.
Couple $3 million more, not $1 million more per year than Christian Kirk.
I think that it's fascinating that, I mean, you mentioned how quickly this all seemed to happen this offseason. I think this offseason was largely the tipping point for teams for having receivers who could be on the move. But also, teams who have realized if you have an elite quarterback and you get them an elite wide receiver, your team has something dominant.
Yeah.
If you have a quarterback you don't know about yet, but you give him an elite receiver, now maybe you can win with him, or at least you're going to know that you can evaluate your quarterback better. And so everyone's looking around going, well, hold on, we want a number one wide receiver, and I'm interested to see if you're a team like the Chiefs or the Packers that are now saying we have elite quarterbacks and we're going to try to give them more depth, maybe spread that money out a little bit. I am so interested to see what the receiver market looks like 3 or 4 years from now. See how long it takes the NFL to adjust.
Here's another thing to look at as well. Can you go through the top annual average values?
Yes.
From just go through there real quick. And
Tyreek Hill at $30 million.
Tua.
Devontae Adams at 28.
Carr, but that's something to star.
DeAndre Hopkins, 27.
Kyler Murray.
Cooper Kupp, 26.7.
Another star there because Matt Stafford.
A.J. Brown, $25 million.
Jalen Hurts.
Boy, I forgot he was an Eagle for a second. You said Jalen Hurts. I was like, that's not right. Oh, it is. He did get traded. Stephon Diggs, 24. Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, but he's on a new contract.
D.K. Metcalf, 24.
No more Russell Wilson.
Deebo Samuel, a little under 24.
Trey Lance. What I'm trying to find the correlation is, the wide receivers that are being paid that money, teams that also have a rookie contract salary.
Gives you extra money to play with, absolutely.
So you can then invest in the wider. But Matt Stafford and Derek Carr are the two that stick out. And Josh Allen.
Yep.
Because Josh Allen's already into the escalating parts of his
but
rookie
Diggs,
deal.
But Diggs was signed before that. Diggs was still signed when he was
so
on
that's
rookie
an
deal.
Annual
was
Hopkins. That's an annual average value. So then what does the cap hit look like in the different years where they may structure it to where, okay,
right,
they may have taken a bigger hit earlier when Josh Allen was on that rookie deal and they saved some money there. Whereas, you know, Kyler Murray rookie deal, Trey Lance rookie deal, Tyreek Hill rookie deal, or Tua Tagovailoa rookie deal, Jalen Hurts rookie contract, McLaurin, I mean, Carson Wentz oftentimes plays like a rookie.
That's rude to rookies.
That's a good point. Sorry about that. My apologies. I mean, Seattle doesn't have the Russell Wilson contract, so now it's Geno Smith and Drew Locke. That's there. Pittsburgh just signed Deontay Johnson, right? It's Mitchell Trubisky, Mason Rudolph.
Kenny Pickett
as well.
I'm sure.
The Jets wanted Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
Zach Wilson.
It's a funny. I think the team building stuff is really interesting. And if you gave me a chance to pay a receiver elite money to pair with a quarterback on a rookie deal, I would do that. But to your point, once you start getting there with highly paid quarterbacks, all of a sudden, if you're the Raiders, you're paying Carr a lot of money, you're paying Adams a lot of money, that's going to come from somewhere else. Can you put that vacancy in a spot that you could fill out with rookies, rookie contracts, high draft picks, or just coach it out of the system and say, oh, we're going to have cheap running backs and linebackers because we can afford it.
Where on that list is Keenan Allen? Because Mike Williams is at 20.
On what? On the average annual value list?
Yeah. Just
he is right there. He is 20 million and $25,000.
So he and Mike Williams are pretty much the same.
Almost exactly the same.
Yeah. And they've got, there's a team that's gone in on two receivers.
Yep.
That has a rookie deal for this year and next year, even though next year they will sign him to a long-term deal. But just as the Chiefs did, that will be a slow build-up into what the cap hit's going to be to where they can afford the Keenan Allen, the Mike Williams. And Allen has, what, 1 or 2 years left on his deal?
Allen and Williams both hit free agency in 2025. I'm sure they could get out of those probably each a year
earlier. Keenan Allen's earlier than Mike Williams.
Or they could have a total overhaul some year, lose them both, and say, we're paying Herbert. Now it's time to have our Chiefs offseason, where you trade Keenan Allen to a team that needs a veteran, and you see if you get a huge haul for Mike Williams. This division's going to stay interesting for the next decade.
Yep, and they don't have to pay for him, but, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is going to make a lot of money. But he's going to make a lot of money while Joe Burrow's also making a lot of money. They're not going to be able to mix and match those to where one guy's making a lot while the other guy's not making as much. But the benefit of that is, for the next couple of years, they're both making they're both combining for, like, you know, $10 million, $11 million against the cap. Those two, probably more, because Joe Burrow's is going to escalate in year three for him. So I don't know what the cap hit would be. But it ain't what you're seeing from, like, the Raiders with Carr and Davante Adams. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. I want to talk about Andrew Wiley, his commentary on guard to now tackle, and then video from training camp practice today that has a play of what we've been talking about and wondering about with a certain player in a certain position. We'll explain that on the other side of the break. More Zone right after this. It's Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
There's one other piece of audio from today that I think is really interesting, but honestly, we went super long in the first segment, and I want to spend a second, like, unpacking this. Is it too early to take a break here, Beards?
No, never too early.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
So we both have our philosophies on breaks. He says never too early to take a break. I say never too late. It's never too late to take a break. Never too late.
The issue is that right now we do need to take our break from about 10:45.
If you are just joining us, the entire first hour is one segment. We were getting ready to throw it a break after the first segment, and then all of a sudden Steve Spagnuolo showed up to the podium. A practice started at 9:15. The Chiefs were talking by 10:30. And so we heard from Steve Spagnuolo. We heard from Andrew Wiley. We heard from Carlos Dunlap for the first time as a Chief. And we heard from Sky Moore. We talked about Dunlap. We also got into a conversation about wide receivers somehow along the way there. But Andrew Wiley talking today and his transition to tackle. Interesting, he said he went into the offseason and teams were talking to him as a tackle, not as a guard who played tackle last year, but a guy who was going to be viewed and coveted and signed as a tackle as a free agent, and the Chiefs as well. So re-signing in Kansas City, that his plan is that he's going to be playing tackle. Of course, he's the starter at right tackle right now. He had said that in the Super Bowl, his first start at the tackle position, he was a guard playing out there. Like, he was taking guard reps as a tackle against the best defensive line in football. That sounds like it's going to be a rough day. Turns out, that's what happened. It was a rough day. So you had a guy playing left tackle that didn't need to be playing left tackle, and the guy playing right tackle who was a guard. So it was a bad day. And
sure was.
Yeah. he picked a bad day to have a bad day. He also talked about, you know, in the offseason that getting more comfortable at that position. He's adding more technique, switching sets, things like that, that he just couldn't really do because you're learning it on the fly when you go from right guard to right tackle in the middle of the season last year. The one thing in looking at what he did a year ago, and that's encouraging to me to see what he could be this year as a right tackle. So he stepped in and had to play against Green Bay in what was week 9. He then started week 10 against the Raiders and started week 11 against the Cowboys. And then they had a bye. So then it was like, okay, take a deep breath. So from the Denver game on, week 13 to the end of the season, for all tackles that played at least 20% of those weeks. So he had to be a starting tackle. You know, one out of every five plays that were run in a game, you needed to be the tackle out there just to even qualify for the rank. There were 80 tackles. 80 tackles in the NFL that were the final, 6 weeks of the season?
Mm-hmm.
That played at least 20% of the snaps. Andrew Wiley's ranking in that time. There's overall tackles, not as a right tackle. Overall tackles. Out of 80, you want to throw a dart to see where he ranked. Pro Football Focus. Out of 80 tackles, once the bye week came and went, and then now you've been practicing, now you're a few games under your belt as the starting right tackle, you're no longer there as a guard, this is your position the rest of the way.
Like 73rd?
73 out of 80.
I'm going to say 38.
38 out of 80. 19th.
Really?
Out of all tackles.
Look at that.
19th overall.
Beard, you were so wrong, man. That makes that side even more impressive because how dumb and wrong you
right?
were, you idiot.
What about pass blocking specifically? So pass blocking specifically for Andrew Wiley out of 80 players.
So he was 19 overall.
19 overall. So that's pass and run combined, as most of the time it would be.
So I said 73rd on the first time.
Yeah, yep. Stupid.
Way
wrong.
Off.
Yeah, 19 we know overall.
I'll go 72.
72. Okay, that makes sense.
I think you're probably going the other way, but I would like be very happy with it, him still being at 25.
41.
Okay, so that was significantly lower.
So it was lower as a pass blocking grade, but it was still a 71.3. So it wasn't 41 where he was like at a 60.
Yep.
He still had a green color next to the 71.3, which in
my
Pro Football Focus is, you know,
good.
Green to yellow to red to then they just
being
tell you to try something else.
Right. So I said 38 as my very first guess.
Yep.
And we ended up right in that category. That makes sense, man. He's a league average starting tackle, and that's not always an insulting thing to say. Orlando Brown would take that as an insult. Andrew Wiley should take it as a compliment.
So run blocking. Out of 80,
good.
Out of 80, right? You would think if he's 19th overall and he's 41st in pass blocking.
Easy math, Beards.
Run blocking, Beards, where would you put him, think that he ranked the last 6 weeks of the season after the Chiefs bye week?
Right.
Of all tackles that played at least 20% of the snaps, so there's 80 tackles there. Where
really
does
think
he,
about it.
Where does he rank?
Well, let's see. I said 73rd, and then I said 72.
And both were
wrong.
72 was closer, though.
So it was closer. But he's got a higher average here because of the run thing.
Correct.
So I'll go like 53rd.
53rd, okay.
I don't...
Seems odd, but whatever.
I'm not sure. I mean, it is an odd number. I guess I'm going to say like 12th.
Seventh.
Look at that.
He was the seventh best tackle.
God, Beards, you're so bad at this.
Andrew Wiley, the last 6 weeks of the season, according to Pro Football Focus, was the seventh best tackle in run blocking. Overall, not just right tackle, was the 19th best tackle in all of football. Overall, not just left tackles. Pass blocking is where he wasn't as good, but it wasn't like he was bad. He was even above average at 71.3. He was 41st. By the way, there's 30 teams in the NFL, and each team starts two tackles. 32 teams, excuse me. So 64 tackles start every week. He was 41 out of 64. As a guard who was inserted as a tackle last year, who then spent the entire offseason working on being a tackle and has now spent training camp specifically being a right tackle, to give an idea of where others rank in that. So offense overall, he was 19th. Offense overall, Orlando Brown was 41st. In pass blocking, we said that Andrew Wiley was 41st in pass blocking specifically. Pass blocking, Orlando Brown was 23rd, so much better than his overall. It's the run blocking where Orlando Brown was significantly lower than Andrew Wiley, who finished second, and Orlando Brown came in 69th. Nice.
That's, well.
Out of 80. So It's interesting. The right side, Andrew Wiley, much better run blocking grade in the last 6 weeks than pass blocking, whereas Orlando Brown, much better pass blocking grade the last 6 weeks than run blocking, which, by the way, I'll take.
Yep.
I'll take.
For both of them, I'll take that, honestly.
100%.
Take both of them.
Absolutely. So your left tackle has a better pass blocking grade than run blocking grade, and came in as the 20. This is the last 6 weeks. Okay, last 6 weeks of the season. And again, the thought process and the logic behind using that is not just simply to cherry pick. It's he was thrown into the Green Bay game.
Yep.
He then played Vegas and then Dallas. And then there was the bye. Okay, so he had some reps there. So he could have been, you know, better in the, you know, Dallas game and things like that. But when you get the bye week and get a little bit of time to take a deep breath, from that point on, regular season only, he was the 19th best tackle, was Andrew Wiley. That's where I have some encouragement of what he could be this year if that trend continues and he's had all offseason with a full switch to position.
You have seen an improvement from him as he has gotten more work in any of his positions, really, more consistency in that given spot. And you know that if Lucas Niang does come back at some point this season, maybe it's early, maybe it's late, maybe the Chiefs would still like him to have that spot. Andrew Wiley could, in a pinch, play at least three different spots pretty confidently.
Yeah.
That is outrageously valuable. But again, if you've got four above average to elite starters and then one starter with, I would have said, I called him league average tackle as a compliment. Some of those metrics would indicate that his ceiling might even be higher than that. Chiefs offensive line just continues to be in an excellent spot.
Yeah. And Albert
and Darian Kennard's hanging out also, you know, waiting to find his role.
Yep. For, you know, not full context, but just, and I don't even think it's devil's advocate, but Albert Breer was at camp, so he's doing his camp tour. He did the Chiefs yesterday, and his camp tour of the Chiefs and talking to the front office and his observations. One of his observations, in fact, the only negative that wasn't just, you know, an outright just positive observation was, he said, quote, right tackle may be the biggest question on the roster. Andrew Wiley is trending toward being the week one starter. Lucas Niang on the pup list could be a factor when he gets healthy. So while we're talking about this and what he did at the end of the year, what the Chiefs saw what he did and had film and firsthand knowledge while going into the offseason and teams talking to him about being a tackle and the Chiefs re-signing him to be a tackle, with Albert Breer, at least conversations he's had, the biggest question on the entire roster is right tackle, where Andrew Wiley is penciled in as a starter right now, that it doesn't seem like the Chiefs, while those numbers are trending in the right direction, it doesn't seem like the Chiefs are like, yeah, we're good at right tackle. Mm-hmm. We're good at right guard. We're good at center. We're good at left guard. We're good at left tackle now that Orlando Brown is here. Right tackle, a little iffy. And maybe that's just wondering, is he going to continue that? Was it some, you know, a good showing? Or, you know, what do they have in Darian Kennard? They clearly believe in Lucas Niang still, even after the injury, because he's mentioned as could be a factor when he gets healthy. But I'd be interested to see what Wiley could look like this year as the starter and just simply saying, you're the right tackle. That's your position. Yeah, you can get some guard reps if need be. But we're not having Orlando Brown get guard reps because he's our left tackle. And we're not having Trey Smith do tackle reps because he's our right guard. So Andrew Wiley, you're our right tackle and focus on that. Get your reps, get your sets in there, and just improve that aspect and not do, you know, split between tackle and guard and left guard and other things. Focus. That's where we're going to have you. And we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening there. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. I teased about a receiver in a certain spot that we have been talking about that we saw today, or at least videos of that. I'll actually get to that tease coming up next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Or can he actually go through a... Sorry. I'm getting choked up about this Patriots dynasty being over.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so jam-packed hour with all the breaks because of the first hour with the press conferences. We'll talk with Matt Lane coming up at noon. One of the things we'll talk about is what we had teased... player in a position, what had kind of been talked about, getting a handoff in the backfield with Sky Moore today.
Grounded
during practice.
Moore, huh?
lining up in the shotgun next to Patrick Mahomes.
Did you hear where I called him Groundmore?
I know.
Groundmore. Yeah, like the opposite of
sky. I continued.
And he's more on the ground.
Yeah, I get it. More than what people probably thought initially.
More like less sky. Is that the same joke, different way?
More like less of that. Probably. So he lined up in the backfield.
He
and
did it.
Got the handle. Not an end around. Not a big old sweep or anything. Actual running back, Sky Moore.